The broadcast is now starting. All attendees are in listen-only mode.
Okay, friends. Hi. And welcome to the continuation of our webinars on the dissipation of glamour. You see that picture in the middle? That's what I look like now. So I'm not putting my usual image up in the upper left-hand corner. Actually, we have a better image of the egoic lotus that Tuya made. It doesn't have red in it, but this is the only one I could find on this particular computer. I just want to express a word of caution. Maybe I learned the hard way with my illness during the last month or so, you know, that we're dealing with forces here that don't want to be disturbed. And so when you make an attack on glamour, you have to really protect yourself, which puts the highlights the protective formula that we use. I mean, I'm certainly going to say it with even greater earnestness now, because these forces want to hold on and continue distorting that which is sort of ruining humanity's relationships with each other. So just to be advised that what we're involved in is not child's play. And I remember from the Dinah books that two people who were in the glamour group I think was number two, the C group, the observers of reality, as they were called. Two of those people had a very serious attack on their aura because they kind of opened the door by letting in a thought form of Master DK, which was not him at all. And they suffered etherically and astrally, and Master DK had to do a lot of repair work with them, and they were in trouble. So they recovered, of course, but it took time and it damaged the group. And so basically, the idea here is that this is serious work, you know, and I say it with renewed emphasis. You have to be willing to get rid of your own glamours if you can recognize them. And then that will protect you more so, because if we don't get rid of our glamours, any one of them may provide a target for those forces that want to take over and distort reality. So this is just my little cautionary tale here. What I'd like to do is we'll just have our usual little pre-meditation before we get into the studies. We're still working on the technique of indifference. Well, we just started that, really. I was up in the far north, and we had just started that. And then I could not go on. But now, after a month or so, here we are again. So let's try to get a sense that all of us are souls working together. And we're not personalities, really. You know, we're increasingly soul-infused personalities. This may not be complete until the fourth degree is ready to be taken, you know, the complete infusion of the personality by the soul. But still, to a certain degree, all of us in this work are bringing in the energy of the soul and transforming, transmuting, even transfiguring our personality. So we relate to each other on the plane of the soul-infused personality. We try to visualize each other in all these different countries in that way. And also, we are seeing each other actually as souls on the higher mental plane. Each one of us is still quite individual on that plane. You know, the sameness aspect of being is not yet in full force. So our whole history is contained in our causal body, our history, at least in this solar system. And it's our objective together in the sense of unity, wherever we may be geographically, to do a piece of work together which will help to clear up the mess on the astral plane, which is preventing us from seeing reality, distortion, exaggeration, too much, too little, you know, not seeing things in proportion. So as a group unity, we are working that way. And we're working in the spirit of brotherhood, which is really a monadic factor, interestingly enough. What DK described brotherhood, it's not, you know, male or female, it's a monadic relationship. We're working that way. All of us cooperating to help clarify the world miasma in preparation for the great centennial meeting of the hierarchy in 2025. And we have a lot of work to do in this century before the Aquarian Age begins in earnest in the year 2117, according to the Tibetan. We have a lot of work to do. And that will be marked by another Venus transit across the face of the sun. Very interesting. So we will sound an om to confirm our solidarity together in the work. Excuse me. Thank you. Well, here we are at number 42. Figure I wasn't with you for 42 because I didn't have enough fortitude to make it through this illness. But I'm back now, and we were talking about how to be Maya free, free of this third factor. There is, you know, it's connected with the third ray, somewhat with the seventh ray, although anyone can be the victim of Maya. It's particularly related to the etheric physical plane. And it's all about whether we can bring through, as it said, the design laid down upon the trestle board of the spiritual consciousness by the great architect. The great architect is a third ray ray lord. And some of you who are Masons will recognize the trestle board where the plans for the various rituals and building process are laid out. So, you know, can the archetypes come down onto the physical plane? That's the question, because there are so many disturbing forces. We have, you know, a veil in the etheric level. It's called the veil of impulsion. You know, and when you do things by impulse, things get chaotic. So this being impelled here and impelled there and driven this way and that way and having a confusion of forces, that prevents the archetype from coming through. Now, all of us are very responsible for getting the archetype through onto the physical plane. And then once we do that, you know, we have to do that first and then take the more difficult task of driving the negative forces onto the astral plane, which is their own place in a place called Mara Kara. You don't want to go there, although Madame Rurik did. You know, what an amazing story about her, that she had the courage to go into a meeting of the Black Lodge and assure them of their defeat. I'm just amazed when I hear that. I wonder how many of us would have the fortitude to do that. I don't think we'd come out, but she did. And so these illusions, or the, let's just say, the presence of the Black Lodge on the etheric plane, where they still are, a real black master cannot make it to the physical plane because he's cut the possibility, cut the energy thread, but they have representatives. As it says in Agni Yoga, in front of the black ones are the gray ones, and in front of the gray ones are the not quite white ones. So, you know, we have work to do. But Rule 10 will help us to drive those forces back onto the astral plane, to their own place, where in a couple hundred years, I don't know how many hundred years, but we can, as a group, use the energy of Vulcan and make a controlled attack against the glamorous forces in a way that will be globally effective. Meanwhile, we're setting the stage for that as we work in this smaller and more modest way. So finally, you know, when we're the real initiate in control of Maya, we don't identify ourselves with the patterns and the forces which are employed out on the etheric physical plane, neither does the planetary logos, and we imitate him. He moves in a world of Maya, free from all illusion, unhindered by glamour, and uncontrolled by the myopic forces. So a more advanced disciple or initiate can do that. And, you know, and the planetary logos sets the example. He doesn't identify with the Maya that he has created. I mean, it's all part of the creative process, really. The big thing is, don't identify with what you create. See, a creation is just an instrument. And, you know, there's all kinds of people that get attached to their creations, and they don't move on from their creations. They don't tread upon the work I do. Remember that one from the aspirational mantra? I tread upon the work I do. I mount upon my slain self. See? So when you offer something creative to the world, good. But if you identify with it, it becomes a hindrance to your understanding and your sight. So this initiate is rapidly arriving, as far as his own little world is concerned, at the same divine indifference. Now think about those words. Divine indifference. It's not an attitude of coldness, okay? It's something else. It's knowing who you are and knowing what you should be concerned about and not concerned about, okay? The same divine indifference which characterizes Sanat Kumara, the Lord of the World. Therefore, this initiate, he increasingly becomes aware of the plan as it exists in the universal mind. So let's go to the atomic plane when we think about the universal mind, you know. Let's see if I can get there to the atomic plane. I can on the charts anyway. Here, this is the atomic plane, and this is the lowest level, in a way, of the universal mind. And this is the area where the plan, divine plan, is formulated, okay? So the plan as it exists in the universal mind, of course, the universal mind goes much higher. It goes on to the cosmic planes. And the purpose which motivates the will of God. And so when we talk about the purpose and the will of God, we're right up there on the highest two planes, which are truly the esoteric planes, and the five below are considered somehow more external, more relating to the third ray, whereas this monadic plane relates very much to the second ray and the logoic plane to the first ray. Okay, so now we'll just go on a little bit more. We were about to begin this on the 23rd of June, but no, that didn't happen. So now it is the 4th of August, 2017, you know, and we're back doing our work. And by the way, the next Glamour webinar will also be in the evening. Tuya here's with my help a little, is having a meeting of some members of the Blue Rose Sisterhood, and we call it Initiation Mystery Week, and we're performing some ceremonies, which help people get an idea of the qualities of the various initiations. So basically, the next glamour presentation will also be in the evening. Usually, we alternate it from a.m. to p.m. and back. And when we start to do that again, we'll let you know. Meanwhile, we'll just inform you as well as possible. Tuya, are we, let's see, today is Friday. Do you have tomorrow a presentation on the Soul of the Nations, a broadcast, I think? I believe so. Maybe, you know, you can check in on that. The last time we broadcast it, unfortunately, the pictures were very nice, but the sound was missing. Well, you know, I'm sure that you're all very intuitive and really understood everything we were saying. But now we seem to have solved those technical problems. It's 9 o'clock. So that's at 6 p.m. GMT tomorrow, Saturday night. We will do something on the souls of the nations. Okay, so we go on now. It is this divine indifference which is responsible for the fact that in attempting to describe pure being or God, notice how he equates those. How very interesting. We have all these different ideas of what God is, but if you really, you know, boil it down, the ultimate of God is pure essential being, which never was born and never will die, and which we all essentially are. So he says that in attempting to describe pure being, and in the effort to arrive at some understanding of the nature of divinity, now remember, divine is different from spiritual. You can use spiritual to refer to anything on the lower five planes of the cosmic physical plane, but when you use the word divine, you're already in the monad. You're already in the realm of being. So the divine planes are the second plane and the first plane. So when attempting to understand the nature of divinity, the formula of negation has been evolved. And you may know about negation. In the Sanskrit, it's neti, neti. Not this, not that, not this, not that. So, you know, what is it? And then if you describe it in a finite way, you don't have it. So basically, the presence of pure being has to dawn upon us through what it is not. God is not this. God is not that. God is no thing. God is neither time nor space, which are just qualities of consciousness. If you stop to think about it, without perception, there would be no time or space. Time and space is God observing itself, you know. God is not feeling or thought. Of course, I have to say all these things that God isn't, God is in the long run, because they're all extensions of God. But for practical purposes and in the beginning, you have to disidentify from all the specific things in order to find that great abstraction which is ever-present, God, reality, pure being. God is not feeling or thought. God is not form or substance. God simply is. And I think that, you know, a great word is isness. You know, maybe a little bit awkward word, but isness is something that everything shares. It can be this shape, that shape, great, bad, small, ugly, beautiful, whatever. It all shares isness. So if you can find the isness of everything, you're getting close to understanding what being, what God is. God simply is. God is, apart from all expression and manifestation, as the manipulator of energy. Now notice these are kind of, you know, like those are third-rate words. The creator of the tangible and intangible worlds. That's a third-ray function. The pervader of life. Now we begin to get more into the second ray. Or the indweller of all forms. That's God immanent. You know, a lot of religions today, well, maybe not a lot, but a few, just don't get it that God is immanent as well as transcendent. And because of that failure to understand, we have a tremendous war between certain religious people and the truly spiritual people. So God is, apart from all these expressions and manifestations, God is the, quote, you know, then you get back in the definition, what are you going to do? But it never captures, words cannot capture the essence of what the deity is. God is the one who can withdraw, and in withdrawing, dispel, dissipate, and devitalize all that has been created. Now, every one of those words stands for a different level. You dispel illusion, you dissipate glamour, and you devitalize Maya. So you've got to attack this. You know, the labors of Hercules are wonderful because it's always talking about this sort of beast who keeps on appearing in different forms, and it's basically your personality or the personality of humanity, and it's always attacking the efforts of the soul. So our choice then is to dispel illusion, dissipate glamour, and devitalize Maya, and devitalize all that has been created, that's Maya, using these words in their fullest significance. Well, you know, obviously Master DK knows a better significance than we do, but we get the idea, I think. So whatever you can say about God, you can also say about us, because in a very interesting and significant way, we are that. We are that God. God stands apart from his entire creation, its entire creation, and God is within his entire creation. And in fact, in an essential way, God is the entire creation while not being the entire creation. So there's a lot of paradox going on there. And if we can figure that out about ourselves, we're in good shape. Then we know that we're, as they say, we're both in the world and yet not of the world. So going on, he says, it will be obvious to you, therefore, that in these three activities of that reality, which is not identified with appearance, the will of God, the destroyer aspect of deity, is beneficently present. Now we say, oh, why death? You know, why death, oh, son of God? If you go into Esoteric Psychology, Volume 1, the Ray Lords are always speaking up. And when they talk to the first Ray, you know, they're saying, why do you have to kill everything and kill us? And, well, you know... And they say, hold off until we're ready. Then you can apply your destructive power. But the reason for death is that so the divine plan can evolve through ever more perfect forms, which it couldn't do if you just keep around all the old forms, which become inadequate. So anyway, the destroyer aspect is behind all this. And the destroyer aspect involves the art of abstraction. The act of abstraction produces the dispelling of the illusory world of thought. You stand back and you realize, well, I may have thought all these things, but they aren't me. They aren't reality. They cannot contain me, but they may be able to express me. Now, any initiate or disciple will know that somehow at length. The withdrawal of the divine attention. Now, this is really interesting. You know how if you remove your attention, things fall apart, right? The withdrawal of the divine attention dissipates the sentient universe and brings glamour to an end. This is like, you know, you don't pay attention to it. And your attention vitalizes things. So energy follows thought. And when you're really keeping your eye on it, you're holding it together, right? But when you withdraw your attention from it, it will fall apart. Now, that doesn't mean you become naive and inattentive. You're just attending to much higher things, and the lesser things fall apart. So the withdrawal of the divine attention, notice the divine attention, which means the attention of the spirit within you, right? That's, you know, the real you, the monad, dissipates the sentient universe and brings glamour to the end, to an end. The cessation of divine direction brings death to the physical world. These are first ray factors. I had a friend, we all worked together in the Seven Ray Institute, and she said to me, well, you know, of course it wasn't necessarily true, but she said, well, Mike, every time you stop paying attention to something, it falls apart. You know, there are a lot of things to take care of, you know, and so I would move my attention from here to there. And when you move your attention, you don't have that coherent factor of the attending attention. So you have to, like Master Moria says, you know, if you're a leader in some way, you should never be too far away or too close. You just have to be right in the middle, attending to, and yet not over-identified with anything. So the lesson for all of us is, where do we put our attention? And what do we identify with? And when we're attending to something, do we identify with it? Or can we keep our focus in the reality we are while seeing everything that's happening in a detached manner? So that's a big job. You know, the Buddha was an expert at that, and he tried to teach us how to do that. So if we stop paying attention, or if God stops paying attention, or our planetary logo stops paying attention, his creation falls apart. Okay, disintegrates, right? Okay. And, you know, it's like in life when you you don't have the will to live anymore. Then, you know, if you've lost the will to live, or to, let's just say you can't stop living, of course, but if you've lost the will to live or to stay in incarnation on some level, you know, it goes. It falls apart. The instrument falls apart. All these activities are evidences of the will, or of the first aspect. The will to good, which can and will function in perfection only when goodwill is finally and fully developed on Earth through the agent of humanity. So what is the definition of goodwill? We all know it. Goodwill is love in action. It's kind of like a third ray representation of the second aspect of divinity. And when we deal with the will to good, it's a very powerful first ray thing, but it's got a lot of admixture of the second ray in it. Because what is the good? You know, the good ends up being related to that which is complete in every way. If you go back, you know, to Socrates and Plato, they were always debating about what is the good. And it's a very Jupiterian thing. And it brings all the necessary factors together and holds them in coherence. In coherence. Not incoherent, but in coherence. So the law of coherence is the second great law of the solar system, and it's obviously a second ray law, and there's a lot of the second ray in it when you talk about the will to good. So from the monadic plane, where we are, you know, spirits and in our essential being, there's a lot of this will to good, and we have to learn how to identify that. I'm reminded now, you know, in the triangles work, which, you know, so many of us have been promoting, and Tuya and I have tried to also, you know, do our share in promoting it. He says a new form of triangle is going to be emerging. Right now, we're expressing light. We're expressing goodwill, you know, love, goodwill. But before long, there will be triangles that express the will to good. And now he says, we're not really ready for that. Okay, you know, and some of us may try to do it a little bit, but they will be more first-rate triangles, and they will transmit this quality between or amongst the triangles network. So we just have to really understand what is the good, what is the will, what is the will to good, and then be examples of that and learn how to transmit that. So, you know, and that'll be, you know, some centuries away, I think. And so all this really requires a deep understanding of love. Let's see, what time is it? I've been talking here for a half hour. Now, I assume that as I'm going along here, that when you have questions or things occur to you, you're making note of them, and so you can, you know, submit your questions either in written form, or verbally, if you wish to speak. It looks like we're getting into a new subject here in the continuation of this work, and maybe we're going to have to wait until next week in order to get into that. I sometimes don't like to break into a new subject when there's not a whole lot of time to develop it. So I think what we could say here, that this will be the end of the academic part. End of academic part of program number 42. And the next time will be beginning, beginning again on the 11th of August, 2017, at 5 p.m. GMT. Okay, 5 p.m. GMT. And we'll still be having our Blue Rose Sisterhood meeting, and some will be in the far, far north where there's a very special energy. If any of you are Blue Rose Sisters or Shiva Brothers, you might want to think about joining us sometime to get a very different vibration as we go north of the Arctic Circle. So, you know, look, what have we been doing? We've been talking about the technique of light. That is largely what we use when we're doing our glamour meditation. And, you know, DK said, look, people have a very distorted view of what the astral plane really is. They think it's quite a wonderful thing, and it's filled with all kinds of wonderful color and interesting forms, and, you know, it's a great place to be and all that. But then he gives the real assessment of it. He says, well, it's a basically, if you really understand what it is, it's a gray world with all kinds of distortion and changing forms, and reality is veiled. So he talks more about the clouds that are found on the astral plane. It isn't even a real plane at that. The matter of the astral plane may be real, so that you can have a continuity between the mental plane and the etheric plane. If you didn't have that continuity, the mental plane couldn't get through. Okay, but on the other hand, it's not a real world, and it gets glamorized, as we would expect that to happen. You know, it's the major plane of glamour, and people begin to substitute what they see on the astral plane for reality. And this is a great, great big mistake, and it happens in the spiritual world. So, you know, or among spiritual aspirants, and there it's most dangerous because it leads them astray. So our technique of light is helping to bring the fog into the light and dispel it. You know, we have the analogy that, you know, when there are clouds and fogs in the morning and then the sun rises behind them and the rays of the sun keep working on the fog, well, before you know it, the rays of the sun are breaking through and the fog is lifting. That, I think, is a pretty good and simple expression of what happens when the light is released on the astral plane. And then, of course, there's the whole thing about the technique of the presence. And we have some meditations on that, and I think can do that sometime. But what is the presence? Well, it depends on where you are. You know, the presences are hidden energies and hidden beings that manifest themselves into your world of consciousness, and then you detect them. But you may not actually see them, or you may. So basically, for most of us, the soul is a presence. And if the soul were involved, or the soul consciousness were involved in all we do in a personal sense, we would be a lot more loving and intelligent here on this particular plane of existence where, for a while, we're forced to live. So what is the first presence? The first presence is the soul. Well, what's going on in the spiritual triad, you know? What about the divine mind, you know? Let's say the abstract mind. What about the Buddhic energy? What about the Atmic energy? If that comes down your antikarana, so to speak, it comes as a presence of energy. And then what about the monad? That's a presence too, isn't it? Maybe the highest presence that we can possibly touch, because it's our more essential self. So the technique of the presence opens the door to all those higher aspects of ourselves, one at a time, until we can bring them into the personality or whatever is left of the personality and really make their will be known in the lower worlds. So really, it's the technique of getting our higher selves, you know, we're soul, we're triad, we're monad, we're a lot, you know, the higher aspects of the self right here into the lower 18 subplanes of the cosmic physical plane. You know, the moon is 18 and the moon is illusion, and we've got to bring the presence in to dispel all these illusions. But now we're working also on Maya. So we've done some work in the mental plane with the technique of the presence, and we become like a mentally infused soul-infused being. We've done some work on the astral plane with light, and now we're dealing in this world of creation and learning how to become a divine manipulator. DK says there are essentially three types of people: the divine director, the divine teacher, and the divine manipulator. And you can imagine that's monad 1, 2, and 3. Okay. So, you know, we have other monadic rays too, and it doesn't give names for them. But essentially, we are either the director, the teacher, or the manipulator, essentially. Okay. So, so this is where I will stop for the moment. And then when we resume here, we'll get more into some of the details about the science of the breath and the manipulation of the forces. It's a wonderful book to study. You know, these instructions were given to 9 people who were in the, what you call it, trained observers group. It's very interesting that the dissipation of glamour occurred with the trained observers. Now, what that means is that most of us, when we observe something, we get it wrong, unless we're really trained. So he was trying to teach these people really how to observe reality. And that's what they learned when they could dissipate their glamour. Of course, it was a tough group, and there were casualties along the way. And I almost became a casualty myself, but, you know, am reporting back for duty, as it were. The soldier is no longer sidelined. So, this would be an opportunity, if you wish, if you have any questions, any comments, maybe Bredeger or BL will help me here. But what I'm going to do is, if you have any comments or questions, I will try to address themselves to me. And if I cannot see your written question, then Brett will tell me what it is. So if you have anything you'd like to say about what we've been discussing, that would be fine. And looks like Catherine is here. She's got her hand up. So, okay, Catherine from Australia. Hey, listen, why can't I make you, Brett, can you get Catherine to be green instead of orange? What's going on here? Catherine, you may be self-muted. Is self-muted and muted by an organizer. So now we're trying to unmute you, but you have to unmute yourself first if for some reason you wish to speak, because I saw your hand was raised. So until you unmute yourself, if you wish to speak, I can't do anything about it.
Yeah, there's something wrong.
Something's not right, huh? Okay, if we can figure that out, and Catherine, if you can figure out that you are on self-mute and can get yourself off of that, then we can have you speak, or if you want to write out something, then you can do that too. Anyway, nice to see you here. Let's see.
Yes, we have a written comment from Rebecca.
Okay, let's see. Let's see, can we get it on the, Rebecca, what's the, okay, Rebecca. Let's see if I, is it something that I should be seeing? Oh, here it is.
There it is.
Okay, there it is. Okay. Great. Now we got you there. And thank you for your... Hey, I'm making something bigger. Oh, isn't that nice? A little bigger, anyway.
Michael?
Yeah.
Remember that when you put your question on the screen, it's... Yeah, that should work. Go ahead.
Would that be okay? Okay.
The other people here on the regular webinar will have to look in the questions section. That's all.
Okay, very good. Let's see, have I made the view clear about Olivia was wanting to see who all is there. Have we taken care of that, Brett, maybe?
Yes.
Okay, very good. Okay, great. We got it. Now, so Rebecca, welcome back to our Sideline Spiritual Soldier. There he is. And it's 3 a.m. in Australia. Boy, you've got some kind of dedication there. So I have to quietly type instead of speaking to you. It's fine. 3 a.m., that's an article of faith. It's just me and one solitary owl outside my room in the bright moonlight. Well, there's a symbol of wisdom, I suppose. The owl has that. Awake in our village at this time. Okay, that's wonderful. The Australian bird life is fantastic. Once a kookaburra, I think it's a kookaburra, or was it it was some bird with an incredible decibel level. And I was trying to teach, and this bird landed on the fence right outside the teaching room, and from that time on, it was a contest between me and the bird. I think the bird was better heard than I was. I mean, really amazing level. What's the name of that thing? It's just on the tip of my tongue. God. I don't know if it was a kookaburra, but something else. And it really made the racket, but the wonderful bird life in Australia. Anyway, glad to see you here, Rebecca. And is there, am I missing a question, Brett, or is it just a comment? It looks like a comment.
It's just a comment.
Okay, yeah, and I'm really glad to be back, and I hope that I can continue to be back. I have a very good inspirer in my wife. She doesn't seem to want me to die yet. I can't understand why, but anyway, I persist. So she's good at knowing when a person has to go into the place where they make you better. Although there was so much love I received and good medical care and a lot of inner battles and all that. So if you don't want me here, you can blame my wife, and she will accept. she will accept your blame. Okay, thanks, Rebecca. Now, do we have? Is there anything further? Would you like to say something or any comments? See, the thing is, Karen. Okay, Karen would like to speak, so I'm going to. Okay, good. You're good, Karen. Just proceed.
Okay. I just want to say welcome back, Michael, and how much I've missed you. And how important, you know, this break in and what we've been doing really helps me to realize how important it is for me to be connected and aligned and doing the one work with a group.
Great. So I'm just going to pass this on a little bit to the group. She welcomes me back, and the break has helped her realize how important it is to be aligned, you know, with this work we're really doing with the group. It's a moment of assimilation and realization. And yet you were saying something further, Karen.
Well, I'm just grateful that we're starting up again. It means it's really, really helpful.
Excellent, Karen. She's grateful we're starting up again and that it's helpful. It has its risks, but it is helpful. You know, DK gave so many wonderful suggestions, and he even requested our help in many, many ways. And the amazing thing is that sometimes, you know, as well-meaning as his students were, they just didn't offer the help as he requested it. You know, they were interested in other things, you know. When he said, please do triangles, please do world good will, you know, please spread the great invocation. Some of them really did it. And he says, you know who you are. And others didn't. And he says, you know who you are. You know, he says, you will know whether. He even had them fill out meditation reports every month. And he would skim them and scan them and understand. But, you know, when you have to ask yourself, if we were in their shoes and we were under that kind of pressure where we know the master's, you know, kind of watching and aware, would we have done any better? Of course, that was 70, 80 years ago. And a lot of the elevation of consciousness has come since that time. So maybe we would say, you know, okay, maybe we would do better, maybe. And we have the advantage of having all the books in front of our eyes now. you know, the people of that time, those books were sent out as lesson sets, and they weren't necessarily collated and put into book form and so forth. And a lot of them hadn't even been written. So, you know, we have a big, big advantage. But then out comes a new expression of the teaching before long. The year 2025 is the beginning. And he specifically mentions astrology, which is interesting since it's the third phase of the teaching. And I know we'll have a chance to really prove ourselves in relation to this great teaching, which is sanctioned by Master Kutumi, by the Christ, and by Sanat Kumara. In other words, the Tibetan had permission to do what he did. He had permission to bring this out. And sometimes he'll say, I can't talk about this now. I don't have permission. I'm not allowed. It is not permitted to say more, blah, blah, blah. So he was always tuned in with his superiors about what could be revealed. But then, you know, he did reveal more than he planned because there was a very good response. So that's why so much about the seven cosmic paths appears in the last book he wrote, which was The Rays and the Initiations. And he probably thought it would be enough to write what he wrote in Cosmic Fire 20 years earlier. But, you know, we responded. So I hope that we will all respond well, you know, now. To the forthcoming teaching, and I hope that we will recognize the forthcoming teaching when it happens, because that was the big mistake of the Theosophical Society as it was constituted at that time. Now, there were many Theosophists who did recognize Alice Bailey, you know, and she made the mistake of saying, oh, that's my master, you know, because Master Kutumi had walked into her study sometime earlier and said, would you like to help me? So she recognized the picture of him, but that immediately set her at odds with a number of Theosophists who said, who is this person who can say that's my master? Anyway, they didn't recognize in Alice Bailey the quality of the Tibetan's note. But now years have passed and many, many Theosophists have managed to take both the earlier Theosophical teaching and the Alice Bailey teaching. I considered myself to be one of those because I was a Theosophist for a number of years before I recognized the Alice Bailey teaching. And I'm really looking forward to the third installment, wherever I will be. I know I'll be out among everybody before long, reading books, I know. Okay, thanks, Karen. I really appreciate your comments, and I'm glad to be back. Okay, are there any other thoughts, questions, points? Okay, what do we got here? Okay, go to the question pane. Okay, and let's see, we have Olivia, but that's been solved, and Rebecca's been solved, or not solved, but spoken to. Okay, here's Rose, here's your daughter, Sandy. Rose's mother's right here in the group. So let's try to put, yep, you're good. Go ahead, Rose. Can you, you're off mute now, so you should be able to speak. Your mother's laughing. Okay, it's just a question of your microphone, I suppose. But you are green, and it's a good color when you consider this particular media. I'd rather be green than orange, but they both came from the previous solar system. Okay, there must be some issue with the microphone. But if you want to write out a question, up, there you go.
Okay, you can hear me?
I can now, yes.
I can hear you. Good. Hello, Sandy and everyone, and hi, Michael. Glad you're doing a little better.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for the medicine, by the way. Your mother's making me take it. Okay.
Good.
Okay. So, yes, I appreciate your presence. So did you have any thought, or you just kind of welcoming us back here?
I think it's important that we recognize in the field of humanity people that are doing this work of glamour, illusion, and Maya dissipation through their mind on the mental level. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm sure there's hundreds of people we could name and groups and organizations that are working for the clarity of thought, the clarity of whatever field it's in, whether it's science or or doesn't matter, and that it's important to recognize the work that they are doing, even they don't know that they're doing this, but they're just doing it because they see the importance of it.
Good. Let me stop for a second so I can communicate a little bit of that. Rose is saying that we should look out in the world and recognize the people who, even unconsciously to themselves, are thinking clearly, really doing the work of clarification in their own particular field. There's lots of them. And, you know, some of you will have been members of the Arcane School. They always said at the end, the very last question, do you recognize any members of the new group of world servers that are at work? They may not know they're in that group or the clarification work they're doing, but, you know, do you recognize them? So she's emphasizing that we should recognize all these various people who may be working on the mental plane to clarify things. Okay, go ahead, Rose.
And by doing that, we help strengthen their work and create more of the greater group field.
That we help to strengthen their work when we recognize them and create the greater group field. And that was, you know, the Arcane School is always saying, you know, strengthen the hands of the new group of world servers wherever you may find them, and you know the Tibetan is behind that. So our recognition, and sometimes you write a letter, sometimes you call somebody, sometimes you express appreciation, it really strengthens them. And DK said an interesting thing. He said when they recognize who they are, they will be strengthened. So you may be helping there. Okay, go ahead, Rose.
That's all. Thank you.
Okay, great. Thank you for your comment. Appreciate that. It's so true. You know, we cannot think that only the people who pick up the occult teaching are the ones doing the work. You know, Master DK paid us the compliment of saying, oh, yes, the occult groups, the most glamored of all the groups. So, gives us a pause, you know, that maybe we have this wonderful teaching. And as he said, well, if you feel a little smug and satisfied because you got it first, you're not ready. So, you know, he somehow is asking us to think very broadly as we look out over humanity and see who's really helping in different ways. And he says many times, the people who have do not have the connection in a conscious way with where they came from are doing a purposefully relinquished awareness of that connection so they could work all the harder and better without the distraction of the, you know, occult and so forth. I mean, I don't know if Franklin Roosevelt knew that he Kemal Ataturk knew that they were connected with Shambhala, you know, but they certainly were, and they did fantastic work. So we've got to be on the lookout for the people who are really doing the work. Thank you, Rose. Okay, and look, Brett, looks like Suzanne has something to say here. Is that correct?
Right.
Okay. And you say here, Suzanne, that I recall my four-year-old son many years ago saying, the law is love at work. Well, that's good. L-A-W, love at work, L-A-W, when asked what he thought love was. In reference to what I was saying today, I welcome back, Spiritual Warrior, you are back at work. Yeah, with a lot of help from my friends on that law. A question, many are out there purporting to be connected with the masters, guidelines and intuition so needed to deal with the not so white. Well, you know, when the motive is selfish, and, you know, in a way, the initiate is known by what he will not say about his own status. You know, it's just so funny, because if you claim the status and the kind of attention that comes with that, you kind of contradict what you've just said. The real initiate will not claim that at all. The initiate may be recognized by their fruits. You shall know them, right? By their fruits, you shall know them. But to go around and saying, well, I'm this high initiate, and therefore you owe me loyalty, attention, cooperation, obedience, we would be slipping right back into the third labor of Hercules, where Bucyrus was basically chaining his students to the altar and say, you have to pretty much worship me, I'm your teacher, you know. So that's where we have to be very, very careful about claims. And when the element of selfishness enters and you see behavior that is self-serving, then you have to be a little wary. Now, look, I'm not saying that it's really easy to understand the initiate's motives or actions. And maybe the initiate will be misunderstood, because that initiate is not always presenting pleasant things for the personality. You know, the initiate is usually saying, work very hard, be humble, don't be eager about taking credit. As DK says, we're the ones who started all this going, and you're taking the credit. But that's okay, you know. We demonstrate to you that we are detached from the recognition that comes with starting something. But in Rule 11, there's this whole thing about working with detachment from any kind of recognition. Now, inner recognition, outer recognition, all that, it tends to emphasize the lower state of identity, the lower ego. So just be on the lookout for that kind of thing. And he says, walk shoulder to shoulder, hand in hand, and go through the portal of initiation together in these days of group initiation. You just have to be very watchful without being, you know, excessively critical. You can analyze, but not criticize. This is interesting. DK says to his students, let me analyze your problem for you, which means he's going to try to bring clarity to it. And you know, and instead of, let me tell you what an idiot you are for being stuck in this low phase of evolution. He's not saying that, is he? So if you read the Dyna letters, you just really see how a master deals with the problems that inevitably present themselves. So, okay, well, thank you, Suzanne. Thank you for your comment and your question. Okay, anything else before we get into our glamour meditation, friends? Okay, Alex in London. Alex, hi, and welcome.
Hi. So happy to have you back, really. Missed this group. You sound really good.
Okay, thank you, Alex. I sound better than I am, but what the heck, you know.
And thank to you for holding on to you, please.
Yes, you did a good job, and she may regret at times that she held on to me, but she did, and here I am. Okay.
Well, please take care. Missed this group a lot. I second everything that Karen said. It was great to hear Karen's voice. Everything that she said, missed the group a lot. It was great to hear Rose's voice. I want to thank Rose and for all that she did sharing her wisdom with us during her father's passing. She did a huge service in dissipating glamour. In not just, you know, she didn't just ask for our prayers, but she actually expressed her wisdom and her understanding about death. And death is a celebration and a joy. She said, mission accomplished when he passed at that propitious time. Yeah. And she spoke of it as an interlude and thinking of him as being on vacation. I find that really useful.
Yes, excellent letter. Let me tell the group, she's commenting on the wisdom Rose expressed on Aaron's passing, and how it was helpful to the group, the wisdom expressed there, and how that sharing was very beneficial, you know, what death is and the celebration involved in it. And some of you may know that Sandy's husband has passed on recently. So that's Rose's father. And so she commented on it from an occult point of view, and it was helpful to many people. Yeah. Okay. So go ahead.
So there's so many ways that we can strengthen each other and strengthen the group. And I feel, you know, their presence is very strong. It's very tangible all the time. And so thank you. And thank you for doing this and for continuing to work so hard for us.
Basic thank you, Alex. The basic idea is good to be back with the group. Glad the group is functioning. And a big thank you to everybody who is contributing their wisdom to the process. Thank you, Alex.
And Michael, will you be speaking about the eclipse at some point somewhere? I want to hear your...
Well, you know, probably, you know, the eclipse, it's a full eclipse in some places, and it lands right on my moon, so I better be, will I be speaking about it? Okay,
yes,
probably at the time of the, I think both Tuya and I will be speaking about it, and it will be at the time when we broadcast the pre-full moon webinar, because we're having the Sirius Leo festival here, and then the coming later new moon eclipse, which is still in Leo. But the big eclipse that everybody's looking at is the one at 15 degrees of Aquarius, and also 15 of Leo. So yes, I'll try to say something about it. You know, obviously the whole Leo Aquarius polarity is right. You know, it's a PowerPoint if you think about it. In the fixed signs, you look for the places of power. And the beginning of every cardinal sign is a place of power. Okay, so like zero Aries, zero Cancer, you know, because the equinoxes and the solstices are coming in there. Zero Libra, zero Capricorn. That's our big solstitial and equinoctial cycle, and big changes occur there. But now look, there's other power points, and they are on the fixed cross. And at 15 degrees of the fixed crosses are those power points again. Just what you do is you add 45 degrees to each cardinal point. And you're going to find the 15-degree power point. And this particular eclipse is on that. So it really emphasizes the fullness of the Leo-Aquarius polarity. And boy, is that working out in terms of the selfish group conscious, selfish personal consciousness versus the group possibilities. And maybe we'll have some clarity about that. What is personal and what is for the benefit of the whole? I think that's being worked out in the United States and maybe also, you know, from your perspective in the UK and really all around the world. So, you know, these PowerPoints being hit with a full eclipse like that, I think awakens us to the big issue of the Aquarian age. Is it personal or is it in terms of the group? That's the question. So maybe I'll enlarge on that just a little bit.
Thank you.
Okay, you bet, Alex. And then here's another question. Could you give the dates and times for the pre-full moon broadcast? I don't have the email yet. Not sure if it's gone. I don't think it has gone yet, Joe. Has it gone? I've been a little bit out of commission. But date...
We'll be sending that out today.
Okay, fantastic. Okay, Joe will be sending that out today. And my pre-full moon thing is it on the 6th? Is that it? The night here in Finland of the 6th? 8 p.m. GMT.
Eight p.m. Yes, correct.
8 p.m. GMT, okay. And then, of course, you calculate according to where you are. It'll be in Australia later, of course, and the next day, and earlier in the United States. And then, Tuya, the next day, we'll do the actual exact full moon with the broadcast, with the images and the music and so forth, okay? All right, so if you have anything on that, Joe or Brett or BL, just put it in the chat box about the timing of it. Okay.
Yes, we'll do that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, are we good now? Because I think it's time for us to get into the meditation before the natives get restless. You know what I mean? Okay. I'm just looking at the group gathered here, and they'd like me to stop talking about these little details and get into the meat of the matter. Okay, so here we go. Let's do that. But now I have to, you know, unfortunately, this does not have. Okay, let me get rid of this, but I don't know how. Here's Glamour Project, and here is Dissipating Glamour. I'd like to formula for the dissipation of. It's so easy when you have the tab thing, you know, but I don't have the tab thing. This looks like it. There it is. Okay. Okay, what glamour shall we take up tonight? You know, but really, I haven't. Decided. Any preferences? There's enough of them, you know, out there. I think, again, I'd like to, you know, focus on, DK calls it, amazingly, he calls it the great glamour of hatred, which, isn't that interesting? And it's related to separation and thinking that, you know, other people and their ideas are a threat to yourself and to your ideas, and it's just dividing the world. I was just looking at an article the other day, not really reading it yet, but it says, why does North Korea hate the United States so much? See, so, you know, and religions are hating each other, really hatred. And DK said, well, you know, you can fight a war, but it's always best when hatred is not involved. He said the First World War had a lot more hatred than the Second World War, and we know how much hatred there was in the Second World War. But you know that, you remember those advertisements where it says, okay, now we're going to go kill the Hun. You know, in other words, they characterize the entire German people as the Hun, like Attila the Hun. So you got everybody mobilized against an entire people just because of who they were. And it's not the real issue of the war. It's hatred of the other person. So let's deal with that one, which I think, you know, there's a whole drama working itself out on the world stage right now. Maybe the epicenter of this is the United States at the moment, where the Leo and Aquarius polarity is working itself out. The present president has the Leo rising. The former president had Aquarius rising. Aquarius is the sole sign of the United States and the sign into which we are all progressing. Leo is a great sign, but we know it can be misused when you go to the selfish stage. So we'll talk about the glamour of hatred. And we'll focus carefully, you know, when we do this protective formula. Remember, it's the center of your forehead, the center of your chest, your left eye, and your right eye. That's how you form the cross there, okay? So we're all together, and we'll do our meditation. And we'll just sit for a moment in silence. We can't obviously name everybody here, you know, but we get the idea that there is a group that has come together in all geographical, many geographical areas, and we're offering ourselves in service to help to solve, just to help a little, to solve this world problem that DK identifies as glamour. So we're all getting our inner resources together to try to make some contribution to this ongoing attempt at solving. And now, you know, with earnestness, is a, you know, this is dangerous work. The solar plexus in so many of us is far from sealed and in a harmless condition, which would deflect negativity. So we're going to use this protective formula, which is the long cross between the forehead, the center of the chest, the left eye, and the right eye. And so we say, as we go together, as a soul, I work in light, and then down to the chest, and darkness cannot touch me. Left eye, I take my stand within the light. I work, and from that point, I never move. So let's do that again, and we know where the cross goes as we do it. As a soul, I work in light, and darkness cannot touch me. I take my stand within the light. I work, and from that point, I never move. Think about that for a minute. So the light is our great protection. And remember that our work is, in a way, a direct attack upon the place where the planetary Black Lodge is centered, in Mara Kara, as the word has been given, the home of Mara. And you may remember that it is Mara that the Buddha fought when he was under the Bodhi tree, symbolizing the Black Lodge and all negativity and all the glamour, illusion, and Maya generated. And so our work together in solidarity and unity protects us and renders us effective. Now we go next into the what's called the three preparatory stages, which is dealing with the visualization of light. So there's the light of vitality in the etheric body, and even the dark light of matter, as it's called, and the light of the prana and of the etheric body. Those are the lights of matter, and then the light of the mind. So let's visualize that we focus together the dual light of matter and of mind, and the focusing is done on the lower mental plane. I would say on the fourth level of the lower mental plane. So as we're doing this within our own energy system, we lift up the energy of matter, ether, onto the mental plane and blend it with the light of mind. And now we meditate briefly on soul contact and try through our imagination, or in fact, to recognize the presence of soul light. That soul light is always waiting to descend if we would give it the opportunity. It's waiting to infuse the personality mechanism. So it is present and ready to be applied. And then we fuse these two lesser lights with soul light, and we do this upon the plane of mind. We're really working from the fourth subplane, the highest plane of the lower mind, which is becoming supported by the vitality of matter, the light of matter, and is focusing itself, and supported and energized by the light of the soul. We fuse, at least in the imagination, the three different lights together. So all of our thinking is thinking in the light of the soul and supported by the light and vitality of matter. And then we're going to stay together this little mantra about the light, which we are in process of focusing. And so we say, the light is one, and in that light shall we see light. This is the light that turns the darkness into day. The light is one, and in that light shall we see light. This is the light that turns the darkness into day. We're always interested in the light of day on the Buddhic plane, where true intuition reigns. In that light, we shall see light. Get the lesser lights to a point of high focus, and a greater light will be revealed 3 times the Om. Now we enter the phase where we use the formula. And as the words are said, we're going to visualize that a great searchlight being turned on, generated from the light, the triple light we have created, soul, mind, and the light of matter. And from that comes the great searchlight, which we're going to turn on and direct towards the astral plane. And so we say together, radiance are we and power. We stand forever with our hands stretched out, linking the heavens and the earth, the inner world of meaning and the subtle world of glamour. We reach into the light and bring it down to meet the need. We reach into the silent place and bring from thence the gift of understanding. Thus, with the light we work and turn the darkness into day, and we visualize that process occurring according to the formula we have been using. Meaning, understanding, darkness into day. Now, we're going to invoke together the spiritual will, which comes from, well, really, first from the monad, if we can imagine it. We invoke that spiritual will of the monad. And from the plane of will, the atmic plane, and through the jewel and the lotus and the synthesis petals, And from the will petals of the egoic lotus, which are called the sacrifice petals, we together are invoking our spiritual will to strengthen our efforts at the dissipation of glamour on the astral plane. So it's as if we are all infused by spiritual will. And this will certainly strengthen our beam of dissipating light. As we now get into the real work, sounding a mantra connected with will, together with power upon its beam, the light is focused on the goal. So our beam of light is empowered by the spiritual will, and the work will proceed with the words of power, three sentences using which we visualize the glamour of hatred being penetrated, weakened, and dissipated. The first word of power, the power of our united light prevents the appearance of the glamour of hatred. And the second word of power, the power of our united light negates the quality of the glamour from affecting humanity. And finally, the third word of power, the power of our united light destroys the life behind the glamour of hatred. And we will have 5 minutes of silence and intensity of purpose as we see the work proceeding. 5 minutes of silence as we see the work proceeding. So our group work has focused the will-inspired beam of triple light as one upon the astral plane, helping to prevent the great glamour of hatred from appearing, helping its quality not affect humanity, and taking away the very life and vitality which supports those energy forms which produce hatred. It will be overcome, of course, and the great era of peace and of love wisdom with the presence of the Christ in the Aquarian Age will occur, and we'll wonder at the dark ages through which all of us have been living. Once the light of love irradiates the 18 lower subplanes and especially dissipates the glamour to which so many are subjected on the astral plane, such as the level of humanity's present evolution. So now, through an act of visualization, we withdraw our will-empowered beam. We take it back onto the mental plane from whence it went forth, and we temporarily turn off that dissipating beam, that searchlight. And we will sound the Om 3 times, affirming the effectiveness of the work done, remembering your protective formula, that shining cross between your forehead and chest and the 2 eyes. Well, thank you, friends, for attending this work, participating in this work tomorrow night. Same time, we'll be having a broadcast. You know, you can use your comprehensive, ask comprehensive link to get to that. And we'll be talking about the souls of nations in a particular respect. You know, when Olivia, Tuya, and I got together to discuss the starting of this particular glamour initiative, we knew it would be tough going, and we knew there were dangers involved. So let us maturely recognize that we are playing with the lower fires here and trying to prevent them from having a continuing effect on humanity as we bring in the higher solar fire of the soul. That's our job, and we do it responsibly, we do it together, we do it in unity, and we persist as much as is possible to help the great ones clear the, well, it's not so much clear the air, it's clear the water. Even the great efforts at cleaning up the ocean, where strides, great ideas are coming forward about that, is all part of the kind of thing we're doing in that great ocean of the astral plane. So thank you for attending, and we'll get this up on Makara as soon as we can. You can review it if you wish, and you can tell your friends about it. And please also tell your friends about our efforts with the Blue Rose Sisterhood, the Blue Rose Sisters and the Shiva Brothers, where we are working on the building of the causal body of humanity through the 108 qualities of Venus, powerful Christ-centered work and part of the redemptive process, preparing the way for the great Lord, the Christ, to come. Unless the Christ is born in our hearts and grows into maturity, we can't be very effective in helping other people do the same. So thank you, and looking forward to seeing you tomorrow evening, 5 o'clock GMT. Anything you want to say something? No, okay, to you will speak tomorrow. Okay, not at the moment. Okay, thank you, and bye-bye. All the best to you. See you later. Bye-bye.